Welcome to Money and Taxes from BB to XYZ, where we break down a single money topic and explain how it affects those across generations from baby boomers to XYZ. I'm Jason Spessener, certified financial planner and enrolled agent.
And I'm Regina Neenan, certified financial planner. Now, Jason, we all know that sometimes financial stuff happens. I'm talking unexpected stuff, like my recent car situation or, you know, having to fly to the Midwest for a funeral. Financial things that we weren't planning on, but now we have to worry about funding.
And that stuff can get expensive pretty darn fast. Plus, there's, of course, the emotional side with some of these circumstances that unfold.
Tell me about it. I was so stressed when I didn't have my car for over 2 weeks. And with that added financial strain, the stress just builds and builds. I remember seeing a stat a couple of years ago that, you know, the average American couldn't cover an unexpected $400 expense. So how do you plan for these things?
Well, and like, how do you reduce the stress that's involved financially as well?
Well, one way is with your EFOF. Because if you have some dollars there that you can rely on, then you can worry more about the logistics and less about the finances.
Right. And so that's what we're really going to be talking all about, is how to prepare for almost anything financially and go through some scenarios. But there's also more to it than having an EFOF. You also need to have some strategies, just conceptually, how you would approach things and how you would handle certain situations if they were to arise beyond just simply the dollars and cents in your bank account.
That seems like a lot, though. Like, how do you prepare for almost anything? What's the best way to prepare? How should you place these resources in line so you have them at the ready when you happen to need them, if you need them? How do you protect yourself? And how do you recover after this stuff happens?
Well, it's probably not going to obviously cover everything, because surely we're not going to spend 20 minutes talking about every possible scenario that you could ever encounter that could stress your financial life and stress your life in general. However, there are a handful of things that we can borrow from our generational examples to give you some perspective on what we mean. So let's talk about and start with baby boomers and think of one where you're entering retirement, and early in that retirement, all of a sudden, there are some down markets. So think about this. Think about entering retirement towards the very end of 2021. And of course, you go into 2022 and the stock market didn't do so hot. And so now all of a sudden, you've realized something called a sequence of returns risk that has come to fruition for you, because in that time frame that you retired, all of a sudden you went from having X number of dollars to potentially up to 20-25% less, simply just based on the timing. And so how do you prepare for weathering that storm? Now, surely you would say, okay, have an EFOF. I mean, have an Emergency of Future Opportunities Fund. That's probably not going to cover the whole thing. That's probably not going to be the only answer here.
We're going back to 2021 here, and when we talk about EFOFs, or Emergency and Future Opportunities Funds, we're talking usually between 3 and 6 months of expenses, not years if someone is still recovering.
Yeah, right. So that's where we turn the discussion to, you talk about your investment allocation, you talk about how you're invested, and you start thinking about that EFOF as a part of that equation. But it's not the whole thing. And so what amount of risk is your portfolio exposed to? This is where you start to make those adjustments. And I hear it a lot. Jason, I'm entering retirement, or I'm getting close to retirement. Should I invest differently? Should I take on less risk? This sort of answers that question. It's not about what your tolerance for risk is, or even necessarily your capacity for risk, but it's about how to align those resources with your needs now that you have a different circumstance, now that you're not accumulating assets, you're actually living off of those assets.
Yeah, a huge part of that is your time horizon. When you're in that drawdown phase, maybe it makes sense to take on less risk to really protect the assets that you have while still earning enough to outpace inflation so that you can still live the lifestyle that you've been saving and planning and getting ready for all these years.
But here's the important part of this particular preparation for this stuff happening to you if you do enter retirement, and that is start to frame the amount of low risk or no risk assets that you hold. So this might be your cash. This might be your treasuries or even bonds, right? And these sort of lower volatility things, investments that don't zigzag up and down all over the place. Start to frame those in the amount of time they would buy you if the stock market, for example, did sell off, do you have 2, 3, 4 years, 5 years potentially that you could ride it out with those lower risk investments while your higher risk investments do their thing, but do eventually recover? So if you enter that retirement at the end of 2021, you go through that really bad year in 2022, but you are prepared with 3, 4, 5 years of low or no risk resources. Now, all of a sudden, here we are looking at the recovery that we had in 2023. You're sitting here in 2024. And you're not in a terrible position. You didn't have to make any rash or unwise decisions while markets were selling off, of course, in 2022.
Exactly. So in addition to that, you know, broader context of your ultimate time horizon, the number of years that you're going to want to enjoy life as you are from now through the end of your financial plan or when you're expected to pass away, you're looking at the shorter time frame, smaller increments where you're going to really protect yourself by having low risk assets. Is that right?
Yeah, that's essentially it, is thinking about those sort of time periods where short-term volatility shouldn't rule everything and you shouldn't be making those emotional decisions based on just blips effectively on the radar, because you do have a long time frame. I always think of this concept of time horizon as a little misleading, because most of us think about it as the day you're going to start to spend money in retirement and live off of those resources. But at the same time, there's probably going to be another 30 plus years potentially on the other side of that. And you need to be prepared for that entire time frame.
Gotcha. Well, that makes a lot of sense, especially when we think about that being an emergency fund to support your emergency fund, a market emergency fund, if you will.
Sure, exactly. And the place that you will replenish that cash eventually.
Now, moving into Gen X, maybe some of our Gen Xers out there have college age kids and, you know, they've been searching, they've been putting in their applications, trying to find where they fit best for this next phase of their life. But maybe they end up going to a school that mom and dad haven't planned for and maybe can't afford. But of course, as parents, you still want to support your kids. What do you do when they are maybe going to a pricier school that was definitely not part of the plan?
All of a sudden, your kiddo gets into Harvard, some just unbelievable opportunity, but at a really high price, potentially with no financial aid, for example, and just a scenario where, hey, we had prepared for an in-state school and we have a lot of it covered. But now, I don't know if that $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 price tag per year is going to be sustainable. Like, how do we address that? What do we have to do? Well, the first thing, of course, right, is we set some boundaries. Surely we have that conversation, yes?
Of course. I mean, I hope all of the parents out there are sitting down with kids and saying, you know, college is expensive. Here's what we're willing and able to do to help you out. And here's some other avenues if maybe you plan to spend more, whether it's on a higher priced school or on campus living if you're going somewhere local. Really understanding which role the parents and the child or children will play when it comes to going to college. And parents out there, friendly reminder, you do not have to pay for every cent of school for your kids. Some folks out there get the idea that they need to really set themselves and their kids up for success for that next step in life. But really, any help is going to go a long way to helping your child achieve their education goals.
There is this, I guess, formulaic approach to understanding, is it going to be worth it? You can surely go look and see what the expected earnings are for graduating from a specific school with a specific major and all of these sort of expectations that go into it. And a lot of times you'll find that potentially it may not be worth it. It may involve a much greater cost than you would want to bear or prudently bear. But you're right. You want to be that parent that is supportive of your kids, sort of helps them take that next step in an effective way that doesn't just overwhelm them, because it's very easily to get overwhelmed with student loan debt, for example. But again, the boundaries and the understanding of, hey, we had prepared to cover, you know, $15,000 a year or whatever that number is, lay that out there and help your child understand how to compare, as any good financial planner would, kind of the risk and reward, the trade-offs, the prioritization of whether or not this degree from this massive big name school is actually going to be worth it in the long run.
Exactly. And also remember that not every decision is purely financial. Maybe your child really wants to go to a certain school because of the prestige that it offers, because of how it's going to look on a resume, because some of their friends might be going there. Help them understand really what they're going to get out of it, what the risk and return are, and understand their other options, whether it's student loans or borrowing from other family members, for example.
Yeah, most of these big name schools that you're most familiar with, you're probably really familiar with them because of their athletic program. You may see them in a championship game, for example, and it's a big name and you're just like, oh, I really want to go to that school. I'm really drawn to it. But what does that exactly have to offer towards setting yourself up for the future? Unless, of course, course, you're an athlete, which on that very slim 0.5% chance of actually going pro and doing that, that's a whole different perspective here. But yeah, absolutely. Like, not all the big names in athletics translates to big potential payoff in the academics and, of course, the workforce when you do leave school. So just something to keep in mind there as those conversations come up for our Gen Xers. On the Gen Y side here, if we talk about millennials and we think about something that happens fairly frequently and now is a bigger deal than it was maybe 10 years ago, and that is that family car biting the dust. And all of a sudden, you've got this five-figure investment that has not only like seen a potential kind of life-ending issue happen, but now you're looking at a pretty expensive replacement cost, not only in purchase price, but also in financing charges and so on. So what do you do? Do you pay for a repair? Do you go and invest in that new or new to you car? Like, how do you handle this next step?
Well, Jason, I just went through this. Thank you so much for reminding me about the car issues I just experienced. I got my car back after, as I mentioned earlier, not having it for about 2 weeks. So not only was it the waiting to have a car, it was also the cost to do the ride shares, to change around some travel plans. So some emotional stress there, borrowing vehicles from friends, doing a rental vehicle for the first time ever. So it was so much more than just worrying about, do I get the car fixed? How long is it going to be in the shop? But of course, that was part of it. Luckily, I have access to the service called Carfax, and they offer an estimated value for your vehicle. So it was really easy for me to base the repair costs against that and say, okay, you know, this is still a small enough portion of the car's value that I'm going to go ahead and move forward with it. But it already has gotten me thinking of, you know, what's my next vehicle going to be? Is it time to go out to start doing some test drives and seeing what I might be looking at as far as cost for my next car? How much do I need to start saving for that? How do I build that into my financial plan? Hearing what I just said, Jason, what other recommendations would you have for someone whose car is, you know, maybe on its last leg?
Checking out the details, right? If you do especially have like a new to you car or what was a new to you car and you don't know maybe the history of it, like Carfax, I think is one of those that gives you sort of that, here's what happened to your car, here's what it's worth now. I think Kelley Blue Book's another that will give you that value. Here's my sort of line in the sand for how to evaluate whether or not you should do a repair or consider another vehicle is like, is that repair going to cost more than that vehicle is worth? And sometimes that is the answer is yes. And that I think is a clear sign. If you're going to walk out of that mechanic shop with something worth less than the dollars you just spent on it, it's probably time to say goodbye to the vehicle. Now, even if it's not, even if you're going to invest, let's say, $5,000 into some major repair on a vehicle that's worth $10,000, there are some other considerations you want to make. Make sure that mechanic gives you an idea of what sort of life expectancy they feel you will get out of this repair. Are you going to be able to drive it another 100,000 miles, or is this going to get you the next 10 to 15,000? Is there other deferred maintenance? Is there other issues that may be lurking that you need to invest some more dollars in? Again, these are all considerations to come up with and to ponder when you're looking at replacing and or repairing that car. Because the bottom line is cars are really expensive right now. There are dealer markups on new and used cars all over the place. It's hard to find a good, reliable vehicle for an affordable price at this point. So having an EFOF, yes, you're prepared to write the check if you need to. But there's a few more details, of course, that are going to go into this decision-making for sure.
Absolutely. Story of my life here.
But you made it. You came out with a great success story in a lot of respects, though, right, Reggie? You have a vehicle that's back up and running, and you didn't have to get a new one.
Now, let's move into Gen Z. And, you know, one of the big things that could happen to a Gen Zer is job loss. Maybe you've just started your career in your desired industry. You've set yourself up with a really nice income. You're starting to be able to really rely on those adult paychecks where you can spend a little bit more when you want to. Things are getting stable. And then all of a sudden, it's gone. You've been laid off or lost your job for some reason. What do you do?
Poof. The job's gone. Like, it was just there. And then, you know, we just saw this last year or so, right? There was a lot of, especially in the high tech field, there was that turnover that started to come up. Well, of course, we're going to go back to the CFOF. You want to prepare. You need to be in those times of abundance when things are going really well. And hey, I'm getting this nice pay and I'm getting these stock options and I'm getting all of these things that I can use and rely on. Like, that is where you start to take those preparation opportunities. That is where you start to build that EFOF. So this is a message for, of course, getting ready for the stuff that's going to happen in the future. It's to tell you, hey, this is why building the EFOF is so important. So you can deal with the lean times if they just show up really out of nowhere and completely out of your control.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important to really understand your cash flow plan. See how much you could save if you needed to cut out some expenses while you're in those lean times, as you had mentioned, to make it through, to have the time to find your next job that's really going to be fulfilling for you, that's going to get you back to that salary, that stable life. So yeah, take the time to understand where your money is going, how you might be able to shift. And if you haven't started yet, begin to build your EFOF so that if something were to happen sooner rather than later, as unfortunate as that would be, you would be prepared and you could move forward with confidence.
And I'm going to mention something here that may seem obvious to most and maybe not. I'm not sure, but I actually talked with someone who had lost their job and wasn't even aware of the unemployment benefits that come along. So by the way, like, make sure you look into those sorts of things. If you lose a job, if it's no fault of your own, you just get laid off, whatever the case is, look into unemployment, look into different things that can help you sort of just get back on your feet, make the most of that EFOF, right? Because the EFOF is there to protect you from sudden job loss, unexpected expenses, opportunities that may arise, but it doesn't need to cover all of it. And there are other resources, including that unemployment benefit that your state almost certainly has, that will extend the life of your EFOF as well.
Yeah, great point, Jason. And with that, I'll get us into today's takeaway, as I'll lead us off here with takeaway number one. Stuff happens. So build your EFOF and get ready with some low-risk invested assets so you can be ready for almost anything. Also, be ready to have those tough conversations with family if need be.
Yeah, absolutely. And remember that frustrations and emotions are going to run high when this stuff is happening. So it's important to understand that you got to focus on the things that you can control. There are surely going to be factors that are completely out of your control. I know it's hard, but try to ignore them as you're making decisions and how to address and deal with the stuff that's going on.
Easier said than done, but as my mom let me know last night, there's nothing you can do about it.
That's true.
Takeaway number three here, don't go it alone. Your financial planner can work through tough situations with you, so you have someone on your side really advocating for you and someone to take some of the emotion off of your shoulders so that you can, again, focus on what you can control and have a professional work through the rest with you.
That's right. The unemotional thinking partner is a huge, huge help when you do get into those high emotion situations, for sure.
Absolutely. Now, if we missed anything important here or you have a future podcast episode idea for us, let us know. Reach out to podcast@fpfoco.com and you'll also find that email address in the show notes.
And I really enjoyed talking into this microphone for the last 20 minutes, but you also should know that this episode was written and produced by me, Jason Spessener.
And me too, Regina Neenan. I also edited the episode.
And Regina does a heck of a job on the editing, I tell you what. Yeah, so anyway, hey, thanks for listening and we'll talk to you soon.
Jason Spessener and Regina Neenan are investment advisor representatives of Financial Planning Fort Collins, a registered investment advisor. The information in this podcast is provided for general educational and entertainment purposes only. It may not apply to you or your specific circumstances and should not be considered financial, investment, or tax advice. I tell you what.